Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Turning the screws on workers, what the Trump administration has done in its final weeks, the independent contractor rule, and how wages for construction workers were actually lowered. And today on the show, the latest from the Ohio AFL-CIO and the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Good afternoon and welcome to the Tuesday, January 5th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, as well as Google Podcasts. Also on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and our Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. We have Tim Berge joining us as our first guest on the show. Tim, of course, is president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. Website is ohioaflcio.org, and congratulations to Tim. He has held the office of presidency for 10 years now. That's right. He was first elected to that seat in January of 2011. He's been with the AFL-CIO for almost 20 years. He began his work in 2002 as legislative director. He also serves as vice chairman of We Are Ohio, which is a nonprofit designed to promote issues of social, civic, and economic justice. Tim is also president of the Central Region State Officers of the AFL-CIO. Today, we're primarily going to talk about Georgia. This is the day of voting in Georgia. This day could change the complexion of the U.S. Senate. If both Democrats, John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock, win the election in Georgia, and it could happen. The polls indicate that they are ahead anywhere between 5 and 6 points. Of course, the real poll is happening today. It's been going on. Voting's been going on for a month now. But if they get elected, that means we have a 50-50 tie in the Senate. When you have a tie, the vice president, the incoming vice president, Kamala Harris, she will be the tie breaker. What a game changer that could be. That could pave the way for the PRO Act, the Protect the Right to Organize. Could mean the end of right to work. Now, that's a stretch. That's a stretch. There's a long way to go. But anyway, there's a lot of people, and I've been talking about this for the last couple of weeks on the show. I really have not seen so much intensity on behalf of working people and labor unions. Almost every labor union is involved in Georgia getting out the vote. And they're doing it remotely, virtually, because of the pandemic. It's not an easy time. Not an easy time. But all eyes are on Georgia, no doubt about that. And we'll take a look at what the Ohio legislature will bring us. We're going to have some changed faces with regard to leadership. And there's some concern. Matt Huffman, who is a right to worker, and he's attacked prevailing wage a couple of times. He might take over as a president of the Ohio Senate. That's scaring a few people, but doesn't seem to have too many backers on that. But we'll get a good point of view from Tim Berge on what he sees for the legislature for 2021. Scott Paul, who is the executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, frequent guest on the show, AmericanManufacturing.org is a website there. And we're going to zero in on rebuilding the American economy. Scott is of the opinion that the United States cannot build back better. And that's Joe Biden's theme. They cannot build back better without investing in American workers. And we don't have the latest stats from December. But in November, manufacturing gained 27,000 jobs. Sounds good? Well, guess what? We're pretty far off. The sector is down almost 600,000 jobs since February, 600,000. And the latest trade figures show the U.S. goods deficit with China is over $26 billion. That's right, $26 billion. Now, there's a number of things the United States can do, and that is to come up with an American manufacturing plan. And that plan is in existence. That plan can create, and Scott's going to lay it all out, anywhere between 6.9 and 12.9 million new jobs by 2024. So, what, 3 years away? 3 years away, it can be done. Investments in infrastructure, roads, bridges, electrical grid, water systems, schools, ports, broadband. We're way behind on all of those. Tax code, that's got to be changed. Wall Street investors, you know what they do? They reward companies for sending jobs offshore. That's got to stop. Biden can do all these things, especially if he has control of the Senate. This is a cool posting on the Alliance's website. The number one most viewed post of 2020, can you guess? A face mask. A face mask. And that prompted the Alliance to point out all the American companies that are making face masks. Yeah. And it's all posted on the website. We'll talk about that. And check this out. At least 32 companies, almost three dozen, with ties to China, got loans from our government of more than $1 million or more. That's right. 125 Chinese-backed companies received loans from the Paycheck Protection Program, which was created at the start of COVID-19 shutdowns to keep America's small businesses afloat and keep workers employed during this unprecedented crisis. In fact, according to the Alliance, as many as $419 million in PPP funds have gone to these companies, many of which have direct ties to China's authoritarian regime. In some cases, it even appears that U.S. taxpayer money went to companies with direct links to the Chinese military. I've got a list here. $10 million went to Continental Aerospace Tech, an aircraft engine maker that's owned by the Aviation Industry Corporation of China, which itself is a state-owned company and has been classified as a Chinese military company by our Defense Department. The company also owns Aviage Systems. Aviage received up to $350,000 in funding, PPP funding. Here's another one. $1 million went to BGI Americas Corporation. That's a gene testing company owned by China's BGI Group. Horizon Advisory notes that BGI's leadership is closely connected to the Chinese state and is now helping build a gene bank in one of the cities in China, where China's government stands accused of orchestrating a genocide of its own people, the Uyghurs. This has been going on for years. Apparently, it's a certain population, ethnic population, that's been imprisoned, and it's like a slave labor camp. And they're trying to, many organizations are trying to infiltrate, but because of the Chinese government, nothing's been accomplished over the years. Scott will get into this as well. This is ridiculous. So we're funding Chinese companies that are owned by the state and have direct ties to the military. Lots to talk about with Scott Paul as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. You know, the U.S. Labor Department has very quietly, updated policies on construction wage standards. And guess what? The industry groups who've been lobbying this for quite some time, oh boy, did they get a Christmas present. Posted deep inside a federal government website on the Department of Labor's Wage and Hour Division. This was just last week. They made a series of technical revisions to wage requirements for contractors on federally assisted building projects that could effectively reduce the pay of workers. Now, they've been talking about this for years. And Alexander Acosta, who was labor secretary several years ago, had close ties to the building trades. He courted support from the building trades unions and fought this off for years. Well, then comes Eugene Scalia, who could give a damn about unions. And all of this happened in the last probably week to 10 days. And essentially, here's the deal. Depending on the specifics of the work, construction workers on various jobs that get funding, government funding, can expect lower wages, said Michael Hancock, who's a former Wage and Hour Division official under President Barack Obama. He's quoted as saying, "This is a slap in the face of construction workers in the 11th hour of the Trump administration." A DOL spokeswoman declined to comment on the administration's late-term rollout of the wage revisions. Since 2019, Wage and Hour Division Davis-Bacon memos are routinely published on the website. So far, nothing's popped up. In one memo, however, Wage and Hour Division Administrator Cheryl Stanton eased builders' ability to pay workers a single wage rate on public projects rather than two or more pay scales for the same contract. That's one thing. Now, that revision was lauded by industry reps who complained that starting in the Obama administration, the agency added a number of complications for companies building multifamily affordable units approved by HUD, Housing and Urban Development. So, the coalition, including the National Association of Home Builders, Mortgage Bankers, the National Multifamily Housing Council, they all urge the government to restrict the circumstances in which the Wage and Hour Division ordered a separate wage classification for work incidental to building an apartment complex, such as a parking lot or a swimming pool. Now, the change, which again was just published last week, makes it more likely that contractors will only need to pay workers the residential prevailing wage rate, which is generally the lowest hourly pay of the four construction wage categories under Davis-Bacon. Do you realize what they did? They went out of their way. When they went out of their way to screw workers, to find a lower scale. Now, here's the good news in all of this. It could all be reversed when Biden takes office. The other issue is the independent contractor rule. And this one, now normally, when you try to change something like the independent contractor, you have to put it out there for 60, 90, 120 days and get public comment. This one was only 10 days. That's right. 10 days. The Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs at the White House Office of Management and Budget has approved a Department of Labor final rule on the use of independent contractors. Now listen closely. The regulation redefines independent contractor for employment law purposes, adopting a so-called economic reality test for determining whether a worker is an employee or an independent contractor. Now, the test interrogates whether the worker is, quote, economically dependent on the possible employer for work, appealing to five factors to make that determination. The two most important factors, the rule indicates, are the nature and degree of an employer's control over the work and the worker's opportunity for profit or loss based on personal initiative or investment. So if you have to get certain tools for a job, whatever you put in, a truck, there's a good example there. You have to buy a truck to make deliveries. Critics recognize the final rule as a stunningly pro-business regulation, which makes it easier for companies to treat workers as independent contractors rather than employees, thereby relieving employers of the need to provide benefits or pay their share of workers' Social Security, workers' comp, and unemployment insurance. In a statement, Representative Bobby Scott, he's a Democrat out of Virginia and chair of the House Committee on Education and Labor, this is what he said. The department's proposal would leave workers even more vulnerable to misclassification by upending long-standing guidance on who is considered an employee under the Fair Labor Standards Act. Another example, siding with business and screwing over workers. Now, some good news. Joe Biden's incoming press secretary, Jen Psaki, has indicated that this regulation, alongside many others issued in the twilight of the Trump administration, will be blocked from taking effect in a memo on Inauguration Day. God, that can't come quick enough. Further, as Bloomberg Law notes, the Biden campaign's labor platform committed to a restoration of the Obama administration's aggressive wage hour misclassification agenda. So this regulation on independent contractors most likely will be overturned when Biden takes office. You know, when you think of stories like this, you just got to wonder how many other things the Trump administration has done to screw workers. I'm sure there will come a day, and hopefully it'll be soon, where we will find out all the things that have happened, because they have been done on the sly. Good example here, 10 days for the independent contractor rule. You know, there's a whole lot more out there. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with Tim Berger of the Ohio AFL-CIO coming up next.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and you can receive our shows on a regular basis. Eventually, give us a rating. 5 stars would be greatly appreciated. Let's go to line number one. Welcome a dear friend, a regular on the show, Tim Berger, president of the AFL-CIO in the great state of Ohio. Website is ohioaflcio.org. Tim, Happy New Year to you, and congratulations. I was on your website and checking out your bio, and I see you are now 10 years as president of the Ohio Labor Federation. So congratulations, 10 years. Does it seem like it went by pretty quick, or was it dragged out a bit? What's your thoughts?
It's gone pretty fast, but it's been eventful, we'll say that. But thank you, and Happy New Year as well.
Eventful, to say the least. We're just talking off the air here, and as soon as Tim became president, he got hit with SB5, which was what happened in various states. We saw Scott Walker in Wisconsin attack collective bargaining. Michigan eventually went right to work, same with Wisconsin. So, man, you had to hit the ground running there as president, didn't you?
Well, with Senate Bill 5, and anytime you attack, you know, these major underpinnings that help working people out, gives us a chance to tell organized labor stories. So that's what we did with Senate Bill 5, and the Ohioans responded in a good way. But it was pretty intense there for a while, for sure.
Yeah. Well, the last 4 years have been pretty intense under Donald Trump, and he's on his way out. He may not think so, but nonetheless, we're going to have a new president in a couple of weeks. Meantime, all eyes are on Georgia. And Tim, I don't know. I'd like to hear from you, because I monitor what goes on in labor every day for this show, in preparation for this show. And we've had a number of guests joining us talking about Georgia. And I have not seen anything so intense. I'd like to get your point of view. And I'm sure Ohio's involved as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, who would have thought first that there would be two U.S. Senate races in Georgia, let alone they would both come to runoffs that would determine the leadership in the U.S. Senate, the control, either Democrats or Republicans. Who would have thought that? And we have two really good labor-backed candidates, and Reverend Warnock and John Ossoff. And that's right. We've spent the entire holiday break, going back now 3-4 weeks, sending personalized postcards into union members in Georgia, making sure they get out there and vote. And we've been making phone calls as well. So certainly here in Ohio, we're having our opportunity to help out and win, so we can get our legislative agenda enacted. That's what it's all about.
Speaking of which, the PRO Act, I've heard Rich Trumka, who heads the National Labor Federation, say on many occasions, if we get control of the Senate, that's going to be a priority for the Biden administration. Do you share those thoughts, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, we need labor reform. It's the field is too tilted against allowing people who want to form and join a union to be able to do so. So the PRO Act will be a priority. An infrastructure bill will be a priority. A lot of things that have been sitting idle because Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans don't want to act to help people out. So there's a lot of opportunities coming. First, we start with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. I've never heard a president or an incoming president talk so much about understanding that organized labor and belonging to a union is an opportunity to get working people moving in the right direction and get the economy moving. He has said the word union so many times, it's so refreshing to understand that we're going to have these opportunities, and we're going to have, you know, a House of Representatives that will understand that we've got to move on some of these key legislative matters, and we've got to have the Senate, and that's what's so critical about these Georgia elections. And I'm optimistic, and we had a conference call yesterday with the Central Region officers of the AFL-CIO and the president of the Georgia AFL-CIO, Charlie Fleming, and they're working their tails off down there. Turnout's through the roof, and we're optimistic.
That's good. That's good. I feel good about it, too. The polling, of course, the real polling is going to wrap up today, and hopefully we'll get a clear-cut decision tonight. You never know how these things could drag out, too, obviously, in the presidential sweepstakes and all that. So I know a lot of people, despite what happens in Georgia, I mean, even if we don't get the two wins there, a lot of people are looking forward to this administration. It's just going to be more difficult. We know that. And workers are not strange to that kind of thing. There's been many hurdles over the years that they had to jump over. We'd like to lower them, but in some cases that just doesn't happen. So we'll see what pans out here tonight. Let's focus on the state of Ohio. I've heard on a couple of occasions there's some concern for workers, especially with control of the Ohio Senate. In the House, it seems to be okay. But in the Senate, there's an individual by the name of Matt Huffman who has attacked prevailing wage in years past. He is most likely, is he confirmed as the head of the Senate now, or where do we stand with that? Maybe you could help me out on that.
Yeah, actually, we have two folks from the Lima region who will be heading the Ohio Senate and the Ohio House. Speaker Kopp in the House and Matt Huffman in the Senate. And, you know, we'll work with anybody, you know, that wants to work with us. And, you know, we'll give folks a chance, and we're going to make sure that we're there telling our story. And if folks want to attack organized labor or time-tested labor law, then just like Senate Bill 5, you know, they'll find out that Ohioans aren't going to stand for it. So, you know, we're hopeful that we won't have to have such, you know, contested legislative battles. But we're going to be there making sure that working people have an opportunity in Ohio to grow and take care of their families. And if regardless of party, if folks want to work with us, you know, we're going to make sure that we do our part to meet them halfway.
All right. Anything on the agenda that you want to call attention to that you're aware of at this juncture, Tim, for Ohio?
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we've got to, you know, we're still dealing with this pandemic, which is really, you know, hurt Ohioans' health and our economy. And so that's priority number one, is to try to turn the corner at some point. Hopefully we can get the vaccines moving and, you know, at some point start to turn the corner on this thing, and hopefully this year, you know, find some opportunities to return to normalcy, whatever that new normalcy may look like. So priority number one is that, and you know, the health and the economic well-being. And we've got a lot of people, Flash, that have lost their jobs. Unfortunately, too many have lost their health and their lives. And we've got folks losing unemployment just this month. We've got people being evicted because they can't pay their rent through no fault of their own. So we're going to be there making sure that their voices are heard, that we help lift their voices up. So that's priority number one as we start the new year.
There you go. All right, we're going to leave it on that note. OhioAFLCIO.org for more information. Tim, congratulations on the 10 years. Good luck on the next 10. If you want to do another 10, that's up to you. But thanks for joining us here on America's Workforce. Looking forward to talking to you next month, all right?
Yeah, looking forward to it as well. Thank you.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Scott Paul is Executive Director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Keyword, American manufacturing. Bring those jobs back from China. That's what it's all about. He'll talk about that next right here on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UConn Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UConnLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to aflcio.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook at AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency, trying desperately to connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org. And if you missed yesterday's show, just go to our website and you can check out the podcast at awfradio.com, awfradio.com. You can get all the shows there. But yesterday we had Steve Rank joining us. Steve's the Executive Director of Safety and Health for the Ironworkers. And he spelled out what they are in the process of doing, and that is the Ironworker Safety Supervisor Certification, which will be the first industry-specific certification in the building trades. The president of the Ironworkers, Eric Dean, announced this in an address last month, highlighting safety and health initiatives for the new year, 2021, which we're now in. And we're going to stay on this. In fact, Eric's going to be guest on the show here probably in the next 3 to 4 weeks. We're working on that right now. Let's go to line number two. Welcome a dear friend, contributor to America's Workforce. Scott Paul is his name. He's executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Great organization, AmericanManufacturing.org. And especially now with the new administration, we're talking about getting people back to work. And the best way to do that, bring those manufacturing jobs back. And they've got a number of statistics that he's going to share with us on the show called America's Workforce. Hey, Scott, Happy New Year to you and welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Flash, happy 2021. It's got to be better than 2020, but it's great to be with you again in this new year.
Absolutely. And I saw this on your post last night. Goodbye, 2020. We will not miss you. And apparently, you have a blog on your website. The most viewed blog of the year was the one dealing with face masks. I mean, if you want to remember 2020.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
It's the face mask. And what I like what you did is you ran down all the American companies making face masks. Now, I didn't realize this. I guess up until, you know, this happened, the pandemic, what was it? Most of the face masks were made in China. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, there were some American companies that were making them, but not on the scale that they were made in China. And the American companies in the N95, you know, like the surgical masks, healthcare grade, were made by 3M and some by Honeywell. But most of their production was overseas. They did have some in the United States, and they eventually scaled some of that up. But for people like you and me and everybody else who should be wearing masks, you know, first of all, you know, the really medical grade mask should go to people who are immunocompromised or healthcare workers. And so for the rest of us, you need a good cloth mask with a couple of layers. And I will tell you, you know, like, capitalism is great and it's terrible at the same time. And the terrible thing about it is you get all these ill actors who are putting stuff out that is made in China or made in Vietnam that isn't very good, but it is super cheap and it's irresistible to do with a click through. So we curated a list of good quality made in America cloth masks for folks And there was a lot of gratitude for that because people didn't know where to look. They didn't know where to find them. And hopefully we connected some people not only with a great product and to keep them and their loved ones safe, but also helped to keep some jobs here in a year where we desperately needed to hang on to every employment opportunity that we could.
Yeah, yeah. Just go to the website and you can check out all the firms and obviously support those firms. You want to make sure that the jobs stay in the United States of America. That's what it's all about. All right, let's talk about this incoming administration, Build Back Better. I mean, there's so many components of it. And what we need to do is, boy, what is it, 20 million people out of work right now? And I'm sure there's a lot of people that have given up looking for work. There's a number of plans in place. Maybe you can speak to at least one or two of them on how we can get America back on track. And primarily the way to do that is to get those jobs back from China that went there for, my God, we lost millions of jobs over the years. Make sure they're American. And obviously, if they're coming back here, let's make them union jobs. What's on the table right now, Scott? What can you share with us?
Absolutely, Flash. So, you know, there's so many histrionics in the presidential race that there still continue to be from Trump, at least for a couple more weeks. But what gets lost in the shuffle is a lot of the policy. And Joe Biden has proposed some very bold investment plans. And, you know, first and foremost, it's, you know, let's get the country vaccinated. Let's wear masks and let's get on the other side of this pandemic as quickly as we can, so that we can resume some normal operations. But beyond that, he understood that there were some structural problems in our economy and that we need massive investments in infrastructure. And those are things from roads and bridges to broadband and schools and what have you, that we need investments in clean energy, that you just can't snap your fingers and hope for a future where we're reducing our carbon output and expect us to everything to be remain the same. You have to have a plan, and that includes investment. And then the third part of this is Made in America procurement and research and development, where he's committed to buy $400 billion at least worth of products and services made in America for the U.S. government that we'll need. And so together, this would create millions of American jobs and support those jobs in manufacturing. And as we've said many times before, the reason why you want to invest in manufacturing is because those jobs tend to pay a little better, and then they have spillover effects. They support jobs that are upstream and downstream and you know, at the grocery store and at the hardware store and everything else where that money can be spent. And so the Build Back Better plan has a lot of potential. But unfortunately, I think, as we're painfully aware, you know, we'll need Congress to do it. This isn't something that Biden can do on his own. And so we're going to be working very hard over the next couple of months to build support in the Congress for these types of major investments that truly would be game changers for American manufacturing and American workers, particularly those who are out of work or who are looking for better paying jobs that can put their skills to use.
You would think by now that Congress would understand this. And you take a look at the stats, and I mentioned this at the top of the show, and it's worth repeating. As a nation, we stand to gain anywhere between 6.9 to 12.9 million jobs by 2024, which is not that far off, including 2.5 million in manufacturing alone. Now, I mean, I know these are numbers, these are projections. In your opinion, it's very doable, it seems, right?
It's absolutely doable. We know, you know, there are some people, Flash, who will say, well, those manufacturing jobs are never coming back because the economy has changed and robots and automation are taking over, or we can't, you know, it's too expensive to make things in the United States. We've shown during periods with the right policies, or even the kind of a do no harm policy, that you can add jobs. We added something close to like a million manufacturing jobs from 2010 to to 2018. So it's possible to do that. And that was without major investments. You know, it was kind of stable investments, but not major investments. And so if you have those big investments, you can certainly do it. And it's kind of like the field of dreams analogy. If you build it, they will come. You know, if manufacturers know there's going to be a marketplace for their goods in the United States, they will make those investments and they will do it. And Trump talked about this a lot. We're going to bring all these jobs back. But, you know, you can't do it through tariffs alone. You have to have the investments. You have to have that sustainable policy that is going to get you where you need to go. And so that's why we're enthusiastic. And this means jobs in every state, and industrial states in particular stand to benefit. And those are some of the states that have been hit the hardest during this pandemic.
Right. Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers here. Wisconsin, if they follow through with this plan, they could see the creation of 181,000 new jobs. Indiana, 185,000. Iowa, 94,000. Michigan, 251,000. And the state of Ohio, 302,000 jobs. Now, you would think that the politicians would get together and say, okay, you know, it's always jobs, 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 jobs. You have a decent job. You're paying taxes. You're growing the economy. What is there not to get about that, Scott? I mean, that's the part I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I guess there's a little bit of politics in all of this, as there is in everything. And so,
right.
Yeah, shocking, right? And so there will undoubtedly be some Republicans who will stand up and say, our spending is out of control. We are spending too much, even though they were willing to give unlimited sums of money to Donald Trump. And the big corporations through tax cuts, trillions of dollars. And so that kind of hypocrisy is what's standing in the way here, because this is one of those policies that from a public perspective, even from a Democratic and Republican voter perspective, is not at all controversial. Everybody
right.
wants to see this happen. Everyone wants to see better investment in roads and bridges and in school construction and in broadband. People want a brighter future for our country, and they want us to be a leader in all of this. And this is one of those few groups, and, you know, I obviously work in Washington, and we have staff all over the country, but this is one of those few issues in Washington that brings labor and business together as well.
Mm-hmm.
To say yeah. this is going to be good for all of us. And so it is just it is hypocrisy and partisanship that will stand in the way of getting this done, because I do believe that Joe Biden will use his leadership to try to push this forward in a way that Trump was never willing to do. He would do these infrastructure weeks that would turn out to be disasters and would get off message because of him. But, you know, I think we'll have that presidential leadership, but it's the hypocrisy and partisanship that we have to overcome. And that's why we'll need to hold these lawmakers accountable.
That's what it's all about. All right, Scott, I got to take a quick break. Scott Paul is the executive director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. In the next segment, we're going to talk about Biden's China challenge, and that's a big one. It's all part of America's workforce. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are Steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Scott Paul. Scott's Executive Director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Joe Biden's China challenge. Boy, this is a big one. And the sad part about it is, you know, we cozied up to China. Scott, I've been doing this show since 1998. I remember when they normalized relations, which was like in 2000. You had the World Trade Organization, you had the protests over in Seattle. Those were pretty violent back in 99. And we saw a lot of this coming. They're saying, hey, don't do this. Don't do this. Now you gotta broaden the markets for American companies. And look what happened since then. So this is going to be a real tough one. And then I'm reading on your website, here's our own government loaning money, not loaning, giving money to companies with ties to China. And China's military. I'm talking about the Paycheck Protection Program. Scott, help me out on this. I don't know what's going on here. Help me out, please.
Yeah, it's a jaw dropper. And again, because 2020 was such a newsy year in so many bad ways, that something like this didn't even, you know, it got a couple of hits in major publications, but you know, there was so much happening that this was unfortunately a sideshow, but it was very important, and again showed the, you know, that if you're going to challenge China in the right way, it has to be an all of government effort, and you can't have one part working against the other part. But that's exactly what happened. The terms of the PPP program that the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin negotiated with congressional leaders, including Republicans, were very vague and very weak, and as a result, a number of Chinese companies that have, I would call, nominal operations in the United States, maybe, you know, in terms of like shipping imports in or stuff like that, were able to access those PPP loans. And so, and as you pointed out, if they, you know, make the promise not to lay anybody off, they get to keep the money, right? And so it's exactly what happened. And there's a firm named Horizon Advisory that did a report on this that showed that there were, in fact, dozens of firms with direct connections to the Chinese government that were able to access not millions, but tens of millions of dollars. And it just it doesn't make any sense. And I can assure you that there is no similar opportunity for American firms in China. And so it is a we have a long way to go. And this is emblematic of the kind of challenge that we're going to face, is that Trump on China talked big, right? I mean, he talked big on China. He put the tariffs on. He said, we're going to change things. And unfortunately, basically, as we enter 2021, here's the situation. We have a large trade deficit with China that's growing because everybody's buying, you know, stuff from Amazon that's imported, right? Number one.
Yeah.
Number two, the tariffs just didn't work, in part because China continues to devalue its currency a little bit, and it offsets the value of those tariffs. And as we discussed in the last segment, we haven't been making the investments we need to make ourselves. And so Biden has not been handed a great plate on this. Is going to have some very difficult decisions to make, because Trump's relationship with China was very erratic and transactional. And we need something that is going to be strategic and that is going to be values driven and that's going to both protect our workers and our economy and also make sure that China is not taking actions that are threatening democracy or economic interests for the United States or its allies.
That being said, Scott, and you know the makeup, and it's not confirmed yet, of Biden's cabinet picks, and I'm sure that's going to play a major role in all this. Your thoughts moving forward? It's not going to happen overnight, I grant you that, but in a couple of years? Can this be turned around? What do you think?
Yeah, well, I think that the folks who will form Biden's foreign and international economic policy team understand the challenge. And I think Biden himself realizes the challenges he faces. He, to his great credit, I will say, when he was vice president and before Xi Jinping became president, was essentially the vice premier in China, although they're not elected the same way that we are. He tried to get to know him particularly well and tried to build a relationship with him. But you know, recently, you know, Biden has looked at the actions that Xi has taken. He's called him a thug. He said the guy is not interested in democratic norms and has a very nationalistic approach. And it's a dangerous one. And so no one wants World War III. That's for certain. And so Biden, first and foremost, is going to try to keep us away from that. But I think he also understands that this erosion of democracy that we've seen in Hong Kong, the treatment of the Uyghurs, which looks like concentration camps, Flash, in 2020 and 2021, just is unimaginable. And then China trying to get to gain favors through bullying or essentially a 21st century version of colonialism. It is a real challenge to our interests and to the interests of our allies. And so I think they know, you know, Joe Biden voted for everything that you mentioned there, Flash, in 2021, basically giving a blank check to China. And it didn't work out the way that anybody had hoped. Although, you know, there were people like you and me and others who said this is a really bad idea. And I think we've been proven right. And Biden knows that. And I think he knows there's no going back to the way things were in the Obama administration or the Clinton administration or the Bush administration. But it's also got to be different than the Trump administration. And so it will be the most important foreign policy challenge that he will face, and a foreign policy challenge that has significant jobs and economic impacts in the United States. You know, there are policy tools that he will have, and if he uses those wisely, I do think that there's a path forward. But it will take a level of sophistication that was completely lacking in the Trump administration.
China's an interesting country because they're a communist country, but they practice capitalism. It's so bizarre.
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. And like you said, they're a bully. And an American company. How many American companies went there for the cheap labor and are no longer there because China copied what they were doing? They'd open up a plant down the street and all of a sudden, boom. They took over that company, whatever that company was producing. And that has been replicated time and time and time again. I just wish, I'm sure a lot of the companies that went over there said, you know what, I learned my lesson. I'm coming back to the United States. And I'm just hoping that will continue here. I'm sure it was an eye opener. And it probably gobbled up a lot of profits of many companies. But I'll tell you, there's a lot on the table here. I wouldn't want to be in Joe Biden's shoes. I mean, there's a lot of things that he has to unwind. I was just mentioning at the top of the show about the rule changes, the independent contractor rules, and the things that they have done in the last couple of weeks to screw over workers and wages. It's mind-boggling. And I think we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg here. But hopefully all of this will come out and brighter days ahead, especially if the Democrats win in Georgia tonight. That would be a good thing. We'll see what happens there. Scott, I am going to leave it on that note. Anything else you want to call attention to? Any seminars are coming up and webinars? I mean, we've covered a few things that you've been doing. Anything you want to call attention to before we wrap it up?
Yeah, we haven't announced a date yet, but we're gonna be, again, pushing this Build Back Better plan hard. And as that ramps up, we'll have a lot of content for folks and for people who want to try to make a difference and make this happen. And we'll give them the tools they need, both through the facts, the economic analysis that you had mentioned, that Economic Policy Institute report, as well as interviews with some of the leaders on Capitol Hill, and we'll try to get this done. But we don't have dates for those yet, but those will be upcoming in the first quarter of this year as we get launched.
Okay, sounds good. Just let me know and we'll get them on the show. Scott Paul, Executive Director of the Alliance for American Manufacturing. You take care. Happy New Year to you, and we'll be in touch, I promise, all right?
Yeah, thanks so much, Flash. Happy New Year. Take care.
All right, that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, District 9 of the Steelworkers and IBEW Local 99 out of Rhode Island. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.